tape ended, you were talking about the record of the women's basketball against Michigan.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden Sue went to Michigan and things changed, and I think it was pretty even, you know, these last 3 years. But she's done a great job there, and I'm very proud of, you know, what she's accomplished, even if it is at Michigan.
Over the last several decades, especially during your tenure as head coach, the administration of the athletic department has been in the news a great deal, with a wide variety and a large number of different athletic directors. How did that affect the operation of the women's basketball program and you and your coaching?
Yeah, remarkably not as much as people would think. I mean, every athletic director that we had a different management style, and so as soon as someone new came in, we'd all kind of have to change the process that we went through to get things done, or, you know, our approach to things. But as far as basketball specifically, I think as long as I was consistent with the athletes, there wasn't that big a change, or they probably never noticed the change. There was some differences philosophically. You know, we had, you know, I think Doug Weaver, who I believe I had his longest tenure while I was here. I mean, I think that's probably true, because Doug Kearney, or Joe Kearney, was only here for about my first 3 or 4 years.
Right.
But, you know, he took care of men's basketball, hockey, and football, and really his philosophy was to hire the best young coaches he could and get the most out of them, and then knowing, you know, that they would move on to better paying jobs and better jobs. And I think I was one of those people that he just thought would be moving on in a short period of time. But, you know, I kind of stuck it out, and things got better as time went on. But, you know, I think Marilee Baker was a big change. I think she came in with very high expectations for the other, at that time, non-revenue sports. Interestingly enough, in my opinion, it was high expectations without compensating coaches to do what they needed to do to win. You know, and then obviously George Perlis, who had his own way of doing things, and now, you know, Clarence Underwood. So it's been an interesting transition for me personally, but I don't think it had that big of an effect on basketball, other than, more importantly, when Title IX came into effect, or we went into the Big Ten Conference, or the whole gender equity issues, those things had a bigger impact on the basketball program than the changes in athletic directors.
Those were external to the university.
Right, right.
I'm interested because, obviously, in your role as assistant AD now, you're looking at it from the other side of the desk.
Yeah.
How would you describe that work with those athletic directors? In your experiences as coach, what was the interaction, the main interaction that you had with the various ADs?
Well, I think coaches have over most of the time that I've been here a lot of autonomy to just kind of do their own thing and, you know, run their own program. The most interaction was probably just over major budget issues. If we felt we needed an additional assistant coach, or we needed more recruiting money in the budget, or we needed another scholarship, that's where the interaction usually occurred with the athletic director. It didn't seem to me that there were huge policy issue changes over the course of, you know, that, or at least not that were trickled down to us as coaches. You know, again, it just depended on, you know, if Doug Weaver were the athletic director, you probably were going to get a no to every budget issue you had. And although now I think about it, I think every athletic director had that first response.
On your budgets and budgeting, what were some of the major factors in that entered in? Was it travel?
Team travel was always huge. You know, once we went from playing in-state schools to playing a Big Ten Conference schedule, that obviously is a big transition. Even once we added Penn State to the conference, that made a big difference in terms of travel, because getting to state college is not an easy feat by any means. And that was, you know, additional money. So team travel was probably the biggest line item. recruiting money became a big issue. You know, as I said, when I first started, you're only looking for one or two athletes, and they were usually around this area, or certainly around Michigan. After a while, we had to broaden our scope and to a kind of a regional base, and then even did some national and international, because we had a couple international players, one from Norway, one from Denmark, a couple Canadian kids on our team. So that line item got bigger and bigger every year as well. Those were probably the two biggest things.
Were there any Board of Trustees members who particularly supported women's athletics over the years that you can think of? Or?
I would say probably Bob Weiss in the last few years was more supportive of women's basketball than any other Board of Trustee member. He actually went with us to the NCAA tournament when we played at Connecticut in 91. That's the first time we'd ever had a board of, first and only time we've ever had a Board of Trustee member, you know, traveling with us. But otherwise, they're pretty much preoccupied with the, you know, men's basketball. And know Roger Wilkinson and his wife Laura were huge women's basketball fans. Dr. Geyer and his wife were huge women's basketball fans, very supportive.
Did the Adamses attend? Or?
No. No. He was too busy with men's basketball and Bob Knight.
How did you work with Gwen Norrell?
She was wonderful. I mean, obviously, she was our faculty rep here for, you know, a very long period of time, and had a lot of interaction with her, obviously, over academic issues and stuff, and just always seemed to be very fair, very concerned about the welfare of, you know, our student athletes. Would always take time to explain things in detail to you or report what was going on in the Big Ten, and just a wonderful, wonderful person and a great advocate for Michigan State athletics.
The timing of her appointment seems to be quite interesting. Maybe the right person at the right
mm-hmm.
time.
mm-hmm.
How do you, you talked a little bit about it before in terms of the academics, that balance, that tension between academics and athletics. Obviously, your high graduation rate speaks very, very well to that. Was there any strategy that you took in terms of your actual dealing with the athletes and talking with them about their classes and about their coursework, or did you intervene when it was obvious that someone was having some difficulty?
Yeah, I did some intervening. You know, I think, you know, we had some, you know, always had academic counselors, and for a while when there was a transition to athletic directors, there was always also a huge transition in academic counselors. So we were going through one or two a year, it seemed like, for a while there for a five-year period of time before we had the Smith Center built. But I think they can just do so much. I mean, the one thing that we as coaches have is playing time that the athletes want. And so, you know, a lot of times you just have to remind them that if they don't go to class, you know, there will be consequences. And, you know, I had some strategies where, you know, the initial thing was that they weren't allowed in practice, and then after a while they'd be suspended from a game, or they wouldn't be able to start, or there were different things that were pretty effective that kept them, you know, in class and motivated. We also, the university really helped us out about, I think it was about 6 years ago when our Big Ten schedule seemed so difficult that we were able to charter, we're given the money to charter so that we could get home after games. For example, we played Sunday afternoon, and a lot of times if we were in Minnesota, Minneapolis, on a Sunday afternoon, to get a commercial flight out was nearly impossible. We'd have to wait till Monday morning, so then we'd miss classes on Monday. And so, and the same thing at the other end. If we played, let's say, on a Friday night, we'd have to miss classes all day Thursday, whereas with the charter, we could go to classes all day Thursday, practice, and then leave. So the money for the charters was really helpful in terms of making sure that our athletes missed as little class time as possible. And I thought that was a big step for the athletic department.
When did that start?
I think it was about 6 years ago. I think the men have been probably doing, men's basketball has been doing it for a little bit longer, but you know, and again, that was another gender equity issue. You know, if we're doing that for the men, why aren't we doing it for the women? But the bottom line is, you know, I think we just had some, we're very fortunate that we had people that were committed to getting a degree. And, you know, they would do what they needed to do to get that degree. And I think the proof of their commitment is how successful they all are now since graduation.
How would you assess the role of President McPherson regarding sports program here at Michigan State in general and also support for women's athletics? In your experience?
That's a pretty heavy question. My experience is that he's very concerned about the athletic department, but his concerns are primarily in regard to men's basketball and football. And there is very little concern about any of the other sports. I wouldn't pick women's athletics out of there. I would say any of the what we now call the Olympic sports. My sense is that it's really not that important, our success.
When you decided to change jobs and step down from that, what were your reasons for doing that?
Probably the most important was my dislike for recruiting. I'm one of these people that want to be honest with the athletes I'm recruiting. I want them to be honest with me. There's a lot of game playing that goes on. I'm not a salesperson, and that's what recruiting is. You know, I'm a teacher, and I just didn't like the sales. I mean, we have a great product to sell, and I always felt very comfortable selling Michigan State, our campus, our athletic programs, our academic programs. But after a while, when an athlete makes a decision to go to a school because of the school colors, you know, it bothers me a little bit. Or my best recruiting story was a young lady from Ontario. This was a long time ago. She had two top priorities on what school she chose. One was being close to home, and the other was the academic program. And she decided to go to UNLV. She was pre-med. And I struggled with that one, you know. But that's just kind of typical of what recruiting is like. I disliked it more and more, and it's very difficult to do something well that you dislike. And so I felt that I had, that I could coach, and I had that strength, but I wasn't real pleased with, you know, with how I was recruiting and the kinds of kids that I was getting after a while. And so that was one reason. Travel, after 24 years, was just really starting to get to me. It was every weekend. It was all year long, really, because if we weren't in season, then I was recruiting. I would spend the month of July on the road in hotels and, you know, in gyms and that sort of thing. But probably, if I were to be really honest, the biggest reason was the change in student-athletes. And that gets into a whole another topic, but just briefly, I just didn't feel that they had the commitment anymore. It's like they were kind of a me generation, and, you know, it's like, what have you done for me lately? Not, you know, what do I need to do to help this program win? Really did not take much responsibility on their own for their poor performances. It was always someone else's fault. It was just really difficult to interact with them after a while. And it started to become a job and not something that I love to do. And it's been nice not having the pressure of winning and being able to watch a basketball game and you know, I mean, I want Michigan State to win, but I don't go home sick to my stomach when when we lose either. So there were a number of reasons. I think it was just time for me to step down, and you know, I want this program to do well, and I just didn't feel that I was doing, you know, as good a job as maybe I needed to do, or I wasn't keeping up anymore with what was happening in recruiting. I don't think I had a problem keeping up with the basketball portion of it, but the recruiting piece really, really started getting to me. When I first came here, the age difference between myself and my athletes was about 4 or 5 years. Well, now it's significantly greater than that. And particularly with the kids that you recruit, you know, now all of a sudden I'm talking to, you know, 17 and 18-year-olds about their, you know, who they're dating and what's happening in chemistry or something, and I have no desire to even know. But anyway, those were probably the biggest reasons.
How do you see the program going now with the new coach? It's very early on, obviously.
Yeah, it's real early, and I've really tried to, you know, respect her and you know, in all honesty, stay away from the program because that's hard. It's hard to take over a program, especially for somebody that's been there that long, but also when that person is still here in the department.
Exactly.
So I think physically it's a good thing that she's in Breslin and I'm here, and all of the athletes, with the exception of one on this year's team, were recruited or coached by me, so I know them very well, and so I'm at every game, and I really am certainly supportive, but I'm also trying very hard not to interfere with the program and just kind of sit back and let her do her thing.
How do you like your new job?
I love my new job. I have one of the aspects of coaching at this level that you do is there's a lot of administrative work that goes as part of coaching, you know, with a, you know, $250,000 budget and a staff of 5, and I mean there's a lot of things, unfortunately, sometimes that go into coaching besides the X's and O's, but the administrative part was one of the things that I really liked. If I disliked recruiting, I really liked the administrative part, so this kind of fell into place. I was able to stay here at Michigan State, which I love. You know, I was able to work with for Dr. Underwood, which I really enjoy. I've known him since he was first at Michigan State, and so I have a lot of respect for him. I like having most nights and weekends free. I didn't even know what weekends were until last April. And then I found out, because we spend so much the whole month of July recruiting and we're on the road all the time when I'm coaching, I found out that there was a holiday in July. It's like called the 4th of July. And people cook out and things like that. I discovered that this year and had some time off at Christmas. Usually I have about 2 days and I actually had a week off. So I really enjoy. One of the things that I wanted very badly to do if I were to take this position was to be able to work with the coaches. And I am a sports supervisor for 10 of our Olympic sports. And I really enjoy that piece. I'm also the camp administrator. We have a summer camp here for high school, junior high school kids. Last summer we ran camps in 16 different sports and had 8,500 kids. So I oversee all of that. I don't run the specific camps, but I do the enrollment and registration and work with housing and food services because all of their overnight camps, most of them, So I enjoy that part as well. And I had been running by my own basketball camps for 24 years, so it was kind of a natural, you know, progression for me.
Was there any point that in your coaching career that you can look back on and say is the pinnacle or the peak?
There were a few, you know, obviously real noteworthy games, but I think winning a Big Ten championship in 97 was probably, I mean, that was something that I was my goal, you know, ever since I came here, ever since we were in the Big Ten. And so to be able to do that, and not only did we do it, but it was with just a very unique group of individuals. We had senior leadership on that team that was just outstanding, and I've never seen it since. Just quality people who gave everything they had, and that's one of the reasons why we won the championship. So that was a real highlight. probably one of my most memorable games was in the NCAA tournament. We were supposed to play the first round here at Michigan State at the Breslin Center, but because of a previously scheduled ice capades, we were forced to play at Oklahoma State. We went there, lost actually in triple overtime, which was just first time I had been involved in a triple overtime game, and it was just an incredible game. As a side note, I had found out I had had mono for about 4 months prior to that game, and so I was very, very ill during that game, and I wasn't sure I was going to last till the end of it. One of our team physicians traveled with us at that point. I think, nobody ever came out and said it, but I think he was there just to make sure that I didn't, you know, pass out or something on them on the sideline. But so that was very, very memorable game.
When you started here, did you anticipate that you'd spend your entire career?
When I started here, I thought I would be here until I finished my master's degree. So I thought I'd be here for, you know, 2, maybe 3 years. And I fell in love with I fell in love with the job. I fell in love with Michigan State. And, you know, it just kind of kept going from there.
I want to thank you on behalf of the program for your sharing your insights and the time we spent.
No problem. I hope it's helpful.
Oh, it'll be very good.
All right.
Thank you.